Welcome to the Golf Betting System Podcast 53. We're covering the 2019 Century Tournament of Champions on the PGA Tour. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. I'm Steve Bamford, PGA Tour previewer at the Golf Betting System. And with me for the first time in 2019, we have European Tour expert Paul Williams. Good morning to you, Paul.
Morning, Steve. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Just for listeners, we're recording this in the United Kingdom on New Year's Day. Paul was feeling a bit cranky yesterday, so I think he was in bed by 10:30 from what he was generally.
That's being generous.
And I was at the other extreme, crawling into bed about 2 o'clock this morning. So it's a bit yin and yang. But we'll be fine. No Barry O'Hanrahan this week. I think he had rather a heavy one over in Ireland yesterday. So he'll be back hopefully for the Sony Open next week. GolfBettingSystem.co.uk is our website. We are available on social media. You can join our Golf Betting System Facebook group. The link is available in the description box. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm available at Bamford Golf. Paul is available at Golf Betting. Look out for the Golf Betting System YouTube channel. We're coming up to 2,000 subscribers on that. Again, I'll put the link through in the description box of the podcast. I present the Golf Betting Show every week on that Golf Betting System YouTube channel. This podcast is available on Podbean, iTunes, Spotify and a myriad of different pod channels. You can also listen via our Golf Betting System YouTube channel. Subscribe and follow the podcast. Now, please take time to rate and review us on iTunes. We would love a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts to help spread the word about the show. And it helps to keep all of our weekly content free across the website. That includes, of course, Paul, our predictor model, yep, which is up already.
Yep, already live for this week for the last couple of days. Actually,
free of charge. We don't charge for it. There's hundreds might be a little bit over the top. We've got lots of variables in now. I mean, this week for Kapalua, we've got stuff in there about Bermuda positive putters, wind positive players, coastal positive players. Resort positive players, so people that go well on tournaments where you've got to shoot low scores. There's a myriad of different stuff in there, par 3, par 4, par 5, performance, greens in reg, you name it. We've even got a variable in there for people or players' performances on Core and Crenshaw designs, which this is one-off. So yes, we're going to push the predictor model a lot harder this year, so don't hesitate to come and use the predictor model free of charge. Right, Century Tournament of Champions, the opening event of the 2019 golfing calendar on the PGA Tour. Now, if I'm thinking this right, Paul, you've got a couple of weeks off, haven't you? You haven't got any events for the first 2 weeks of the year,
yeah,
is that right?
Yeah, it's a bit of a change to the schedule this time round. So the first event is, we were straight into the Rolex series actually, January the 16th, which is Abu Dhabi. And then we're off to Dubai. Bear in mind, the Abu Dhabi event starts on the Wednesday as well. So I don't think it will change any of our timings and in terms of getting our previews and podcasts out. But from a punting perspective, well worth remembering that that's a day early. And then after that, it's back to normal. Thursday starts Dubai, and then off to a new event in Saudi at the end of Jan for the third leg of that Middle East swing that kicks off the European Tour season.
I saw that Bryson DeChambeau's playing in the Dubai Desert Classic this year.
Yeah,
that was on his Twitter feed the other day.
Yeah, there seems to be a few of the top players that have committed to some of these early events on the European Tour. And then, of course, as we work through this year, there's some massive changes to the schedule, full stop, isn't there? But at the back end of the season, one would hope that we're going to see a lot more of the top players coming over for some of the European Tour events as the PGA Tour will have all but dried up by the time we get to September time. So a bit of a change this year, but certainly something to look forward to.
Yeah, I think Keith Pelly's seeing the post PGA Tour playoff part of the schedule as the European Tour as a real strength this year. Yeah. So if you can get the likes of Xander, Patrick Reed and a few more Americans coming across the European Tour to play the Rolex Series events at the end of the year, it's going to add a lot more credence to the European Tour.
Yeah, yeah. We'll see what happens to the...
But yes, I mean, clearly some of the events middle of the season, you know, April and May, there's a complete dearth of quality events on the ET this year.
Yeah, we'll take it.
They've moved Wentworth to September.
Wentworth's in September, the French Open's in October now.
Wow.
So there's some big changes, but I think they've tried to work it around the changes over in the States as best as they can, and I expect we'll feel our way through. They'll feel their way through the first year of this, and any tweaks and changes that need to be made will come in for 2020. But I think you're right. Some of the kind of March, April, May events over on the European Tour are likely to be pretty low key affairs, a lot of the big players will be playing out on the PGA Tour. But
from a betting perspective, from your side, I mean, you don't mind events like that because you can find value players at great prices that win tournaments.
Yeah, I think it gives you a different angle of attack, and it's often frustrating when you're on the European Tour. You get a couple of top players come over and they'll be priced in at 7, 8, 10 to 1, whatever the number is. And the question is always whether you're going to attack those players and almost go all your eggs in one basket with one of the top players, or ignore them and go further down the field. And whilst those players who do come across are boosting the odds of players further down the field, when they win and you've deliberately ignored them, it can be a bit frustrating. But yeah, I do like some of these lower key events because, as you say, you can dig out a little bit of value every now and again, and it can make a big difference to your year. Doesn't matter what the Rolex series or doesn't matter what the prize fund is for these events. From a bookie perspective, from a betting perspective, you're still getting paid what you're
all the same.
Yeah, you're still getting paid what the odds are. So so something to look forward to, I think, and some nice new events to get stuck into as we work through the year.
It's interesting, that angle. I mean, we've got the Tournament of Champions this week. It's a short field, clearly, all of the winners from 2018. There was a maximum of 37 could play it. Mm. Tiger Woods doesn't, Phil Mickelson doesn't, and Justin Rose has in the past, but isn't this year.
Yeah.
So we're 34 players this week.
I think we kind of expected Rose and Mickelson to not be about, did we? But it's a shame about Tiger, because I think that would have added a bit to the event, but not to be.
He debuts at Riviera. Phil Mickelson tends to debut at that career builder, although it's not called that this year. It hasn't got a sponsor, is it? Is it like Desert Classic or something?
Desert Classic. Yeah, not to be confused with the Dubai Desert Classic. Which
Dubai.
It's in a similar kind of time.
Well, that'll be the week when you've got Abu Dhabi. So he tends to pop out at that one. But although he's talking about a lighter schedule this year, so we'll see. But we've got the likes this week. I mean, it is so top heavy. DJ, the defending champion, favourite. John Rahm has been well backed, quite rightly. Justin Thomas is drifting a little at nines. Brooks Koepka's available a bit as big as tens now. You've got Rory McIlroy playing for the first time this year, which is an interesting move. And we know that there's been this constant conversation over the over December about will he play any enough European Tour events. He's going to focus purely on the PGA Tour. Keith Pelly's been flying out to have special chats with him to try and eke an extra outing on the European Tour. Can he fit it in, all this kind of stuff? Anyway, he's available at 11-1 on his tournament debut. Jason Day's at 12s, DeChambeau's at 12s, Reed, who's won here in the past. It's a high quality field. We've got Francesco Molinari as well, who's come across. You've actually got all four of the major champions playing this week in terms of the championships. So clearly you've got Koepka with two, Molinari with the Open, and Patrick Reed with the Masters. And you've still got the likes then of Simpson, Schifelli, Woodland, Cameron Champ. How's he going to go in this kind of field? Leishman, Casey, Bubba Watson is obligatory, well overpriced, 40-1. It's a good field, as you would expect. Let's talk about the course. Now, this is the tournament that's always played at the Plantation Course at Kapalua. on the island of Maui over in Hawaii. It's a Core and Crenshaw design. Now, if you're thinking Core and Crenshaw for some course correlation, they designed renovated the 2014 US Open site, which was at Pinehurst number 2. But to bring it kind of right up to the current, they're the guys that pulled together that amazing new course just outside of Dallas, the Trinity Forest Golf Course, where they hosted the Byron Nelson for the first time last year.
Yeah, that's right.
That was the tournament that Aaron Wise won on Bermuda grass greens. And that's kind of an inland linksy feel to it. No trees, but a lot of ingenuity around the greens, a long golf course as well. So that kind of feel to it with Kapalua. It's a very undulating golf course, this one. They always say it's the toughest walk for caddies. Something like 400 feet of elevation across a round.
Yeah, and you can see that on the TV, can't you? You can see the elevation changes on the telly when you watch this particular one.
Just to run through the stats, course type, clearly coastal. It basically hangs on the cliff tops above the Pacific Ocean. It's a very strange setup. It's a par 73. Now, it's the only one of the year. Do they have any on the European Tour? I know they don't have any more on the PGA Tour. Can you think of a 73 on the European Tour they played?
No. It is an odd setup. And normally when there's a 73, it's an extra par 5, isn't it? But in this case, it's one less par 3, isn't it?
Yeah, 11 par 4s and 3 par 3s. You got it. So just your standard 4 par 5s. But people, this is the thing. It's 7,452 yards. But don't forget, that's a par 73. It's an undulating golf course as well. And this golf course itself, it features Bermuda grass fairways. It features Bermuda grass rough as well. Tends to be 2.5 inches. The greens themselves are very large. 7,120 square feet in average. They feature Tiff Eagle Bermuda grass. And Tiff Eagle, I mean, 5 years ago, there wasn't the volume of Tiff Eagle Bermuda grass golf courses, but now it kind of is the Bermuda grass of choice on the PGA Tour. Yeah. So recently, TPC Sawgrass has become Tiff Eagle. Even over in Malaysia, back in the CIMB Classic back in October, they used to feature Paspulum greens. They've turned to Tiff Eagle. So a lot of these courses on the European Tour feature Tiff Eagle now. So we can run through a little bit of detail around that. They tend to run quite slow, 10 on the stimp, and that's because they're extremely undulating green. So they're large and they're undulating. A lot of grain. You read a lot of stuff from the players around about their grainy greens. You tie that in with their undulation, slopes down to the sea, a kind of... there's an element where players, especially players that haven't played it before, misread putts. They expect the putt to go one way, or actually it kind of strays straight, or it goes even the other. It's a bit of a deceptive golf course. But key features, very wide fairways. Accuracy, not an issue.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking here 63 yards at 300 yards off the tee.
In comparison to some of the other tracks, and you put this in your preview, where you're kind of looking... You know, even from 250 yards off the tee, generally circa 30 yards wide. And these are 53.
Yeah, it's 53. It's like Heathrow Airport runway, mate, or JFK. It's for taking on board jumbos and Airbuses, these fairways. If you miss a fairway, you must have really yanked one. Mm. But I think, you know, intricacies on the course. Yes, the greens, the speed of the greens, it's quite slow. It's a tough walk. There's a lot of blind tee shots. There's a lot of blind second shots. You can, you know, looking at winners here, you can say it's a bomber's paradise. And, you know, you say the same everywhere, can't you? Length helps. But you also get the likes of players that have won here. Jonathan Bird, he's no bomber. No. Steve Stricker's run around here. Zach Johnson has won around here. Stuart Appleby won 3 titles here. Jeff Ogilvy, he's no bomber. He's won a couple of times.
Yeah.
It's one of those courses where you've got to shoot low. Whatever year you look at it, apart from the year where they only played 54 holes, DJ won.
Yeah, that's blowing seriously that year as well, wasn't it?
That was serious 40, 45 mile an hour wind. Mm. The difficulty ranks are always, you know, they're always a very, very low. So take last year. It ranked 47th of 51 courses on the PGA Tour in terms of difficulty. Year before that, so 2017, difficulty rank was 50 of 50. And it, you know, that's just the way it is. It's an easy golf course. So we're looking for guys here that can make plenty of birdies. They can throw in an eagle or three, even better. But they've got to be able to keep bogeys off that card. And the other key to this golf course is the direction and strength of the wind. Now, a lot of golf courses, you look at the wind and it's going to be howling 20, 25 miles an hour. And you think that brings the scoring down. But the key here at Kapalua isn't so much the total strength of the wind, it's the direction of the wind. Now, out in Hawaii, they basically have what they classify trade or kona winds. Trade are winds that come from the east, and those are the predominant winds out here. Or kona winds are from the west or northwest, southwest. And in terms of this golf course, the trade winds, is if it's a trade wind direction, so anything from the northeast through to the southeast, that is the direction of wind that this golf course is built and set up for. It actually makes the golf course play shorter because a lot of the holes, you've got a following wind or wind coming over your shoulder.
Yeah.
If they have kona winds around here, you start getting more problems because you're playing against the wind on a lot of holes, which usually are far more scoreable. Mm. And just to put things into context, this golf course has actually got six sub-400-yard par fours. So gettable par fours. If we're talking also about par fives, there's on the front nine, you've got a 532 and a 521, two par fives of those yardages. I mean, modern day golf, they're reachable for the field, really.
Yeah.
And then on the back side, you've got longer fives. You've got the 555 yard fifth. But again, if that's playing with a trade wind behind you, that could be virtually reachable for, you know, predominantly 80% of the field. And then we've got that hole that we all know, that huge, long 663-yard par 5 18th closing hole. The one that just curls down the hill and it looks like, you know, the green's almost about to fall off the edge of the cliff.
Yeah, yeah.
But yes, it's scorable. And this year, again, I think we're looking at quite strong winds. It's a case of two here. The Thursday and the Friday looks like it's going to be blowing.
Yeah, kind of 25 miles an hour by the looks of it.
Yeah, potentially gusting 30. Mm. But, again, they're trade winds. So the golf course will still be scorable to those that are comfortable in the wind, those that can play well in the wind, and, this is often well forgotten about, those that can also putt well in the wind. Because a lot of players struggle with wind on the greens, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
They just don't like it.
They do. And, you know, given that they expect it to be windy here, it's part of the reason that the green speeds are kept so low. And, you know, again, some players don't get on with 10 stimp greens. They, you know, they'll need the 12, 13, 14 that they're more used to. So there are some intricacies with this event that give you something to grab onto from a punting perspective.
Winners here, DJ 2018, he was 24 under. JT, I was on board JT that week, 22 under in 2017. Jordan Spieth, 30 under. Now, that was relatively tranquil that year, 2016 rather. 30 under, record tournament score. Yeah. Reed in 2015, 21 under. Zach Johnson in 2014, 19 under. Then we go back to Dustin Johnson in 2013. That was the 54-hole tournament. He won at 15 under. People were getting in the each-way payout places, top four, with 9, 10 under that year. Yeah. But that was blowing a hoolie.
Yeah. I remember the first round that got cancelled in the end, didn't it? It was gruesome out there with the wind.
Winning prices, Dustin Johnson was 15-2 last year. Justin Thomas was 22s. Spieth was a 5-1 shot. Reed was 22-1. Zach Johnson, 14-1. Dustin Johnson back in 2013, 14-1. If you actually look at the past five renewals average, it averages out at 14-1 the average price of the winner here. The overall average across going back to 2010 is 17-1. So of all of the winners since 2010, only Jonathan Bird in 2011 was a longer price at 50-1 he won. Everything else is that kind of either very short single digits.
Yeah, kind of mid-20s.
That kind of juicy, you got it. Anything around those, that 12, 14, up to 22, 25-1.
Mm.
So that's just an indicator of where the winning price is. Key constituents, from a what are we looking for from a skill perspective? Easy to say, but basically you need a good all round golfer. I mean, one of the things I've added to my trend or my previews, which again, if you haven't ever read one of my golf betting system betting previews for the PGA Tour, I'll put a link in the description box. One of the things I added for this year is a strokes gained tournament trend. So take the last three winners, going back to 2016. What did they all do off the strokes gained numbers to win? So if you look at DJ, JT and Jordan Spieth, going back to 16. An average what they did. Strokes gained off the tee third. Strokes gained on approach seventh. Strokes gained around the green sixth. Strokes gained tee to green. Now, I don't think I've ever seen this before. DJ first. Justin Thomas first. Jordan Spieth first. Mm. So this is what I'm saying. All-round game.
Yeah.
They all were the masters that particular week from tee to green. And then that's clearly then creating the best birdie or eagle opportunities to get those scores done. And, of course, if they do miss a green, the ability to actually scramble enough to keep pars rather than make really damaging bogeys.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're looking for all rounders. Which,
yeah, we are. And to get
in a high quality field like this, isn't that easy? Because you could pick any of the top 10, couldn't you?
You could. The key is, and looking at these stats, strokes gained tee to green is clearly critical. But then you've got to be able to score once you're on board, haven't you? It's going to come down ultimately to who's going to make those putts. But to get yourself into that position, you know, either through proximity or maximising greens in regulation or maximising strokes gained tee to green, you've got to put yourself into that spot where you can make those birdies.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? And this is a discussion you and I have often had. If you actually take the strokes gained putting number for the three winners, yeah, it's seventh in the field. Strokes gained putting, they were seventh in the field for that number, yeah? As an average.
Yeah.
If you look at putting average and go back to 2010 of the winners, basically that averages out as third best in the field. And you'd very rarely see a number that low.
No.
I mean, take DJ last year. He was eighth for greens in regulation. 23rd for proximity to hole, but he pretty much, when he was on the dance floor, he was holing things. 1.63 putts per GIR is first.
Yeah.
Justin Thomas, 1.68 putts per GIR first. Jordan Spieth, 1.62 putts per GIR first.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the last three winners of all top putts per GIR.
Yeah, you've got to be putting well, haven't you? And, you know, to get to, for Spieth, 30 under, but more generally, kind of low to mid-20s, you've got to be making some putts. And DJ this time last year clearly was making some putts on his first outing of the season. So we shall see.
Mm. Right. Where should we go? Well, I suppose it's a good time as any. I've kind of avoided the top names in the market. I don't know about you. For me, DJ, I just don't think is right at the moment.
No, I still think there's
got a lot of personal stuff going on, hasn't he? And he wasn't in his outings post Ryder Cup. Seemed disinterested, or
yeah, he's not quite right, is he, DJ? I mean, with all of these, and the caveat with any of these early season events is, you know, we don't know how these players will have fared over the winter period, how much golf they'll have played, how much celebrating and partying they've been doing, how much and how much personal strife they may have been going through. But going back to the last time we've seen DJ at the back end of last year, it didn't seem right, did he? You know, the flip side of that is this event has tended to throw up quite a few repeat winners over the years. So, you know, for those looking at last year's performance from DJ, where, you know, he was outstanding, wasn't he? You know, there's a case to be made on that. But, yeah, I'm with you, Steve. I can leave him alone at a best price of 11-2.
19 PGA Tour victories. He has defended a title in the past.
Yep.
Which was the Pebble Beach 2009 and 2010. So he has done it in the past, but yeah, I don't know. He just doesn't feel right to me.
He doesn't strike me as the kind of player who would be overawed, mentally by defending. I think it's more about the state of his general game and his general kind of mental state. And yeah, could be completely wrong, but at the back end of last year gives you an indication that that's it's not 100% there, I don't think.
John Rahm, very popular this week, quite rightly won the Hero World Challenge last time out, didn't he?
He was good.
Very good at that event. You can see him of the top boys, second here last year on course debut. This is one thing I will say, course debutants here don't tend to win because it is such a tricky golf course. And it's a kind of tournament with a unique feel when you're turning up and you're surrounded by just winners from the year before, a lot of big names. Can be a little bit overawing for some of the sort of the lesser knowns.
Yeah,
I'm not putting Rahm in that category, by the way, but the guy is an enigma. His numbers are absolutely fantastic. If he has a big year this year, you could see Rahm really starting to set course to be one of these players that could be setting the pace across future months and years because he's an exceptional talent, this John Rahm. I don't know. We have seen back-to-back winners of the Hero World Challenge who then pop up here and play very well and win. He's got a great game for the golf course in terms of his length off the tee. He's clearly, when on form, a very good putter. He likes Tiff Eagle. I think his Earth course win over on the European Tour, that's Tiff Eagle there, isn't it? The Earth course, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot to like with Rahm, isn't there? And as you say, you know, last year's debut second, you know, and it's only because DJ was, you know, head and shoulders above everyone else that's... you know, he didn't really get a chance of winning this time last year, but he's in decent nick. And this is much more up his alley, isn't it, in terms of a 20-under, 25-under total. That's John Rahm, that's what he wants to do. I mean, for me, if I was picking one out at the top of the market, undoubtedly Rahm would be the one that I was going with. I'm not going to back him. Yeah. For me, he's too short of sevens. I want to try and find a little bit of value in this field, but if I was... pinned down and asked to name a player at the top end, it would be Rahm, I think.
I agree, concur with that completely. JT next up at nines. I think JT isn't quite right either. Has the perfect game again, clearly a winner here in the past. I don't get the feeling that he's quite switched on at the moment. Brooks Koepka then. They're kind of tied in the market. Again, I think Koepka's finished third here in the past, or third or fourth. He's certainly contended here. I think that was potentially on a course debut. Big, powerful sort.
Yeah, it's third in 2016, wasn't he? Although he won rock bottom last year, so yeah, a bit of chalk and cheese there.
You don't ever... Yeah, this is it. With as you said a few minutes ago, you're just not quite sure what you're going to get with some of these players. Mm. He won the CJ Cup, didn't he, in the autumn, following on from the two major victories. And then he went out to Japan to defend his Dunlop Phoenix title. Yeah. He was actually going for a three-peat. He'd won that in 17 and 16. And he kind of didn't get anywhere near the lead in that. So I don't know what you can read into that.
Yeah,
I tell you where I'm at with this. You then down to the likes of Rory McIlroy,
yeah,
and Jason Day. I don't overly fancy either of those guys. I'd be fascinated to see how McIlroy plays this. You know, because the golf course itself, his power, the fact that the driving has been the weakness, but you've got fairways where even if Rory is on one of his traditionally wide days that we tend to see these days, he might be finding far more fairways than he usually does. The course could set up very nicely for him. Whether he can actually get his head around the greens, I'm not so sure about, because, as we say, players that win this eventually have to be red hot with a putter.
Yeah.
I think he'll be a factor, but whether he's a actual in the heat of battle Sunday afternoon kind of factor, I'm not sure about.
Yeah, he's got to putt well, hasn't he? The other factor with this, and you mentioned that debutants tend to struggle a little bit here.
They do.
Although
Rahm was runner-up last
year. Yeah. There's always an exception, but even so, you know, in terms of that kind of price, 15 to 2 or thereabouts, you're looking at him to win, aren't you? You're not looking at him as an each-way bet.
No.
And for me, the course, there's a lot of the sight lines off the tee are quite tricky, or you know, you can't see where you're going. A lot of it's... You're relying on your caddy. You're relying on an element of guesswork, I guess, and that's where experience of this track starts to come into its own. And I think Rory may turn up there, and the track may well be something that really appeals to him. But whether he can really excel in it in his first proper outing, I can't really see it myself.
I'll tell you where I'm at. 9 of the last 10 winners here all played competitive golf in the previous December.
Yeah.
So be that in Australia or at Tiger's Hero World Challenge and or at the QBE shootout. That's the Greg Norman shootout they have where they got pairs playing.
Yeah.
So 9 of the last 10 winners, the only exception to that was Jonathan Bird. And if you work also on the pretense that since 2007 with Vijay Singh, all winners here at Kapalua had won a PGA Tour tournament with a score of 19 under or lower,
yeah,
before they won this.
Got to be able to go low.
So someone that's got the ability to shoot low. So I look at it from that perspective. There's also some key stats, but I won't bore you with that. But key stats I look for, basically stats that show that a player has got the kind of all-round game we are looking for, right? Mm. These are the three I've gone for. Bryson DeChambeau, I've gone 2.5 points each way, 12-1 with Ball Sports. They're paying 5 places each way, 50 odds this week. So are Paddy Power, just to throw that out there. So if you do want an extra place, Ball Sports or Paddy Power are paying 5 places each way at 50 odds. The others are paying 4 places. And I have to say, there are a couple of firms this week, in fact, that's funny because this has changed. One of the firms was paying 4.25 yesterday, and they've now changed to 4.25.
Right, okay.
There is one firm out there still paying 4 places and a 50 odds, which is naughty. Because if you're playing 4 places for this, you should be playing the full quarter odds on the place.
Yeah, to be competitive.
That's the traditional setup for this. So 4.25, that's not good at all.
Do check before you place your bets.
Please do. I'm not. I won't name and shame, but we know what we're doing. Don't go for the bookmaker that's offering 4.25. That's terrible value. Paddy Power and Boyles are offering those 5 places at a 50 odds. Everyone else, bar one bookmaker, are going 4.25. We're recording this on Tuesday. Bryson. Very, very strong all-round game. Has played here last year. Didn't do anything great. But I just like his stats are very, very well rounded at the moment. He shot 21 under when winning in Las Vegas in the fall or in the autumn, as we know it over here. But I just like the fact that he's also been playing golf late into the year. So he was 12th at the Hero World Challenge. out of a field of 18, but don't worry about that. I mean, DJ was 14th in that last year, came here and won. He shot a closing round 4 under 68 at that event. And then I think it was a week or two. Oh, yeah, it was the week after. He then played the QBE shootout with Kevin Na. And he finished just 2 off the lead with Na in that. He finished in 3rd spot. And that event is all about just attacking birdie golf.
Yeah.
I watched some of it on YouTube of his play. He was hitting the ball close, putting well. He's got a half-decent record on Tiff Eagle Bermuda Grass. He finished 2nd at Bay Hill last year. He's got a 3rd and a 4th at Harbortown. I've got no issues at all the fact that he can't putt on the Tiff Eagle Bermuda Grass. And I just think of the better-known marquee names and guys that have got a track record of winning recently, 12-1 was a reasonable price on DeChambeau. I know when Tiger Woods withdrew, there was 14 available. That fell to 12. But actually, I've put this in the preview. You take the last 18 months, Paul.
Yeah.
The two guys with the most wins on the PGA Tour, 5 wins each, DeChambeau and Justin Thomas.
Yeah. Oh, he's been a machine, hasn't he? Up to 5th in the world
You cut that to 2018, so just last year, no one beat him.
No.
He had 4 wins in 2018. The next best were DJ, Koepka and Watson, Bubba.
Yeah.
3 wins.
Yeah. The 3 of those wins.
So, yeah, I'll take the 12th one.
Yeah, 3 of those wins coming in his last 6 regular tournaments as well, weren't they? So, you know, he's clearly in red-hot form at the back end of last year.
Well, I've been reading about, you know, John Rahm and whatever. He's done won so many tournaments in 60 or some odd starts, yeah, which clearly it's a superb performance. But I tell you what, DeChambeau isn't shabby.
No.
You take all of his professional outings going back to 2015, and this includes quite a few on the web, a number on the web.com. He has won, out of 84 events, he's got a win rate of 7.1%. He's won 6 times in 84 events since he debuted as a professional.
Mm. It's impressive.
Mm. He's no slouch, is he?
No.
To back him up, I was interested in Patrick Reed, but I'm not overly ecstatic about the price. I think 25, something like that, I'd be all over Reed like a rash. But 16s, he was cut quite heavily with the withdrawals.
Yeah, he was struggling with a rib injury as well, wasn't he, the back end of last year?
He was, yeah. The one thing with Reed that you and I have been talking about throughout the latter end of autumn was he's hitting a ton of greens. Mm. It was the putter that was letting him down. If he keeps hitting those greens, at some point he's going to go boom and win a tournament.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Could be this week, don't know. The two that I've gone for, kind of mid-range prices. I always like a horse for a course. He's just had his 5th child, Paul.
Webb.
He's producing.
He's a busy boy.
Yeah, Webb. Yeah, he's producing. And his record here is 3rd, 11th, 3rd in 3 outings. He hasn't been here for a while because clearly he didn't win until last year over a period of time. Mm. Putted very well last year, Webb Simpson. Another number I found with him that amazed me, he was 6th last season on the PGA Tour for Eagles.
For a player that doesn't is it particularly long? Yeah, that's a decent haul, isn't it?
He is a decent haul. And when he was 3rd here on debut back in 2012, made 2 eagles that particular year. And if I remember Webb Simpson back then, he was buccaneering, a very good putter. So I think Simpson, again, his record at the moment is just phenomenal in terms of results.
Yeah. He's strong, yeah.
He covered himself in a reasonable amount of glory at the Ryder Cup. 2 points from 3 matches. Beat Justin Rhodes in the singles. There weren't many Americans that did a better job than that. He's actually in his last 16 rounds on the PGA Tour. He's been in the 60s. 6th at the BMW, 4th at the Tour Championship, 15th at the Shriners, 3rd at the RSM Classic. He was shot short of the playoff in that. Finished very well. Had a chance to win that, didn't he? Coming down the stretch,
Wasn't far off, was he?
But the only negative I can see about Webb, and it is a tiny negative, And let's face it, you know, these trends do get broken. He hasn't played in December competitive golf, but then he was third at the RSM Classic, the last PGA Tour event, in mid-November.
Yeah.
Tends to start the season strong when he comes out on his season, on his yearly debut.
Yeah, it was fourth in Hawaii, wasn't it?
I should say that, because you can't say seasonal debut now, can you? Because this ridiculous wraparound. He starts the year strong. Yeah, yeah, calendar year. I just think Simpson, and his record on Tiff Eagle Bermuda grass is just exceptional. So if we're going down the route of not a banger, an Appleby, Ogilvy, Bird, Stricker type winner, ZJ, I think Webb Simpson could be the one that pops out this week, potentially.
Yeah, can play in the wind, can't he? There's not a great deal to dislike, to be honest.
And for me, he's the kind of guy that can shoot those sneaky low scores that are required. 23 under, he won the Shriners Open back in 2013. So he's not shy when it comes to resort-style golf courses in terms of scoring. And the final one, you and I were talking about this at the World Darts, going way back into what seems years ago when we had our Christmas party. It was a great Christmas party, by the way, listeners. Paul and I going to the World Darts for an afternoon session where I hadn't heard of any of the players on the OK. Yeah. It was superb stuff.
We nearly lasted the full four matches as well.
What, until I decided I'd had more than enough queuing up 20 minutes to go to the toilet. Yeah, yeah. It was good stuff. And then we decanted to our usual pub in the centre of London. But when we got to that pub, Paul, we were discussing the cap, because there were a few firms already up with prices. Yeah. This player, he was priced up with Paddy Power on first shows at 40-1 for this. Yeah, and we both said on that day, it's a bad price, it's a wrong price, it's totally overpriced. Now, by the time I managed to get the preview written and out yesterday, and with Woods withdrawing and Rose withdrawing, blah, 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 he'd been backed in. But I'm still all over him like a rash. Mark Leishman, 1.5 points each way. 28-1 with Bet365. So you're getting four places each way and full quarter odds with 365 on both my Simpson and Leishman bet this week. I just think that price is wrong.
For a player who's playing so well at the back end of the year, it does seem out of kilter with the rest of the market, doesn't it? To me,
he's got the kind of perfect game for this. He's long enough, well, more than long enough off the tee. Grew up in Australia, loves playing in the wind, a streaky putter. We've always said he has the all-round game to win a major tournament. Could be this year. He's that good. It's always been between the years where he struggled. But of late, there is no doubt that he has developed. Three PGA Tour victories since the start of 2018. And if we're looking for that player that's been playing competitive golf deep into December, you know, you've got the perfect man here. If I just read this out, 2017, he won the BMW Championship in, you know, a star-studded field at Conway Farms. He won at 23 under that tournament. In May of last year, at Trinity Forest, don't forget that's that Coran Crenshaw design. He finished runner-up to Aaron Wise. He shot 20 under at the Byron Nelson. And then in October last year, of course, but this season, he went to TPC Kuala Lumpur, which features Tiff Eagle Bermuda Grass Greens. He shot 26 under when he landed his fourth PGA Tour victory. You can even stretch it back to 2015 at the Ned Bank, and you know the Ned Bank, Paul, on the European Tour. Yeah. A very tough, stretching Gary Player country club test down in South Africa at Sun City. He was a bit soft that year, but he shot 19 under around there to win that.
Yeah, he played well. Did play well that week.
And then we're looking at this year, this season, Malaysia. He won, of course, as we said. 18th at the CJ Cup. I think he'd had a few sherbets in between the two tournaments, but played well from round two through to four. He then went to back to his homeland, where he paired up with Cameron Smith, finished second in the World Cup of Golf and behind the Belgians. And then the week after that, goes to the Australian PGA Championship and finishes second runner-up to Cameron Smith at that as well. Playing competitive golf deep into December. He was the 36-hole leader here last year, shot 76 in the third round and then finished strong in the final round. I just think he's got a great chance. Barry was messaging me last night, and he said Barry's only bet this week is Mark Leishman. Yeah. His words were, I cannot imagine him not being in the mix for an each-way place. And do you know what? For the price, I think you've got a great shot for actually winning the tournament. Yeah. So those are my three. Leishman, Webb Simpson and Bryson DeChambeau for the Century Tournament. I've got here, Century Tournament of Champions. Any ones that catch your eye, Paul?
Well, I've only had one bet as well, and that's Leishman as well. I did toy with Aaron Wise, and going back to this, the Byron Nelson last year that was played on the Corn Crenshaw design, the Wise one. But again, we've talked about debutants here, and I just have that nagging feeling that you could, you know, you could take a gamble on one of these debutants and, potentially pick out a reasonable price in them, and actually they're not going to perform because they need that outing, they need a run here to really get a feel of the track. So I've gone past him. I mean, going back to that, to the Byron Nelson link, as you said, Leishman was second, wasn't he? So, you know, there's a lot to like on him.
Yeah.
But yeah, looking through Leishman's stats, he led the field for putting at the CIMB, 1.53 on similar. Similar greens is a real eye opener. Second for putting to the Aussie PGA in his last start as well. But with Leishman, I'm looking at his greens and regulation stats the last two outings as well. 83.3 at the CJ Cup, and as you said, that was coming straight off of his win at the CIMB. And we've seen with Mark that he does like to celebrate a win. Yet he was still hitting a lot of greens the following week on his way to 18th place. And then he was second for greens.
For 54, the closing 54 holes when he wasn't hung over, he played very well.
Would he open with 75, 76, something like that? It took himself out of the equation from the start, didn't he? But the rest of the event was, you know, it was pretty competitive. And then he was second for greens and regulation at the Aussie PGA. He's obviously got the pressure of performing at his homeland, and it'll be disappointing not to have converted that one. But I think he can put that right here. He was leading going into the weekend, wasn't he, last year? There was a lot to like about him last year. It was only that one round on the Saturday. And, you know, for a player this deep into his career, I think he's still improving. I think he's still moving forward.
I'd be mega, mega, mega surprised if we've got a leaderboard where Dustin Johnson, John Rahm, Justin Thomas, Brooks Koepka, Rory McIlroy, they're all at the top going into Sunday. It's a battle of the giants for this. It never works out like that. I think you'll get one or potentially two of those guys near the top of the leaderboard, right on the pace, but you're going to get some of the underlings involved, Some of the underlings will get involved. Could be a Patrick Reed. Could be a Bryson DeChambeau. Could be a Xander Schauffele. I mean, it could be a list of players, but I would not be surprised if it is Mark Leishman.
No, me neither. So he's my one and only bet this week, and I think he's got a great chance of placing. And as you said, as the quote from Barry before he'd had his quota of whiskey last night was absolutely spot on.
I think it was after he'd added quota of whiskey, mate.
Perhaps we should put less credence into there. But no,
he was rambling through till 2:30 a.m. when I was trying to get my head down.
But I think he's right. I think it's not just a place you're playing for. I think he's got a chance of winning. He's capable of getting the kind of winning score that's competitive for this event, and he's got the game to suit and the form to suit. I think he's a great punt this week. He's going to be very popular. He's already proving popular, and there's only a little bit of 28s left out there if you shop around. But yes, well worth taking him on against the leaders, I think.
Now, we've had plenty of feedback, Paul. Give us some overpriced players, players who you think are value from a betting perspective or even from a DraftKings perspective. What kind of names are jumping out at you this week?
Well, if I'm looking from a DraftKings perspective, I think the one that sticks out to me is probably Scott Piercy, given his form at the back end of last year, three back-to-back top 10 finishes. He's got a bit
5th, 10th and 6th.
That's right, yeah. And he's got a bit of form here over the years. Got a couple of finished 12th in 2012, 13th the year after. He's proven that he's capable of getting a reasonable enough finish on this track to to suggest that 6,700 on DraftKings is one of the one of the rags effectively, but I think it's better than that if you're looking for someone to complete your team for this week.
If you're looking at this from a statistical perspective, and that, you know, I'm talking about this all round tank. Mm. And there was various numbers I threw in there: par four, par five performance, how well they're putting at the moment. There's a couple of key stats from a distance I like, with mid irons or distance in terms of anything on a long approach, anything over 200 yards, I like bogey avoidance. You know, these kind of key statistics. One name that did jump out at me that was only one statistic full of a full house was Keegan Bradley.
Yeah.
50-1. It's not great, is it? It's not great for Keegan. But he's got a fourth here. And I just think from a DraftKings perspective, I think there's worse players there at 7,300 in terms of price. I don't think that's too bad. Piercy was another that did jump out at me at that price point at 6-7. That is as cheap as chips. The other who I really like, if you're going right down the order from a DraftKings perspective, and he's been back from pillar to post over here in the UK, is Patton Kizzire.
Yeah.
Don't forget, he won the Sony Open last year over in Honolulu. He was as big as, I think it was 200-1. He's been backed in now to anything. If you're getting 100-1, you're getting a good price on him. He is 6,200 on DraftKings.
Yeah, he'll be popular, won't he?
And I think, didn't he win the QBE the other one?
Yep.
No.
Yep.
He did, didn't he? That's right, with Brian Harman.
Yep, that's right.
Defends next week. Going to be 100% motivated. I just think that's a great DraftKings play.
Yeah.
At that price. I mean, that's crazy.
If you're looking for someone at that kind of price to plug the final spot of your team in, then...
Yeah. And you know Patton Kizzire's game. It is. It's resort golf, isn't it? Always has been. He was 15th here on his only outing here last year. So a reasonable start as a course debutant. I think Kizzire could go well, especially from a... Let's fill the team up with someone that's at a very, very cheap price. I think Kizzire is an outstanding angle this week.
Yeah.
Have you got any thoughts on Charles Howell III?
Well,
because we know he loves playing by the coast. Yeah,
does, yeah. Yeah. Obviously, got the win at the back end of the year, didn't he? Got that monkey off his back that's eluded him for a number of years now since his prior win. He's at that kind of backable price, isn't he? 66-1. Whether he can win in this kind of, or contend in this kind of field quality remains to be seen. But from a DraftKings perspective, again, he's not one of those players that you kind of expect to churn out a half decent result, you know, a seventh or an eighth or a tenth or something. And
yes. Yeah.
A seventh.
Could even start the first round slowly, yeah. And then all of a sudden, you know, he's just banging in some nice scores once the pressure's off.
Yeah.
You could see that from Charles, couldn't you? And that, you know, making the odd eagle or birdie, yeah, to really boost his score. He's only played it twice, so we know he doesn't win a lot. 16th on debut, going back to 2003. Can you believe that? Mm. 8th here last time in 2008. 74-70. Here, listen to this. 74 first round, 70-68-67.
Yeah.
Came from 16th and finished 8th. You could see exactly the same with Charles Howell III. I think he's a great DraftKings player.
And yeah, if he's producing that kind of top 10 finish for you, then he's likely earning you some money. The other one near the top of the market is Patrick Reed, who's a bit out of kilter with his price versus his DraftKings price as well. So he's 8-2 and round about the 14-16-1 mark. And realistically, he should probably be about 1,000 more in that kind of bracket, 800,000 more in terms of his DraftKings price. But then that's...
You reckon he should be 9 million, around the 9 million mark?
He should be around about 9. He's currently 8-2, which I think is a little bit too short. So I suspect he'll be one of the higher-owned players this week as a result of that. But quite rightly...
Just for listeners, that 9 million would put him level with Jason Day.
Yeah.
And I would take Reed over Day, personally.
Plenty to ponder.
Interesting. Very good. Anything to add? Or was that us?
No, I think that's us, yeah. So we've got the Sony Open next week, and then the week after we're back to full speed with events both sides of the pond, haven't we?
Yes. So for podcast listeners, we should be back on schedule as we usually are. So we will be recording Monday evening next week, and we'll get the podcast out first thing on the Tuesday. So it's back to normality from next week with the Sony Open. Right. I appreciate your time, Paul. Thank you.
Yep.
Giving away some of your New Year's Day to the podcast.
Yeah, best of luck this week.
I'm going to go and try and retrieve my car. It's about 30 miles away in a different town.
Yeah, good luck.
Once I've sobered up a little. And thanks for listening. We are looking at regular weekly podcasts throughout 2019. We've got an absolutely packed major schedule with, I think, is it four majors in 15 weeks from the Masters onwards or something like that.
It's going to be manic, isn't
it? It's going to be great. We are refreshed and looking forward to it. So thank you, Paul. Again, Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year
to all listeners. And we will be back next week. Thanks for listening. See you again soon.